Welcome to This Week in Debian, the podcast that brings you the latest news and interviews inside the Debian community. Brought to you by FrostbiteSystems.com, providing desktops and notebooks pre-installed with Debian. Every purchase from Frostbite Systems, a portion of the proceeds will be donated back to Debian and help support this great project. So stop on by FrostbiteSystems.com and get your Frostbox today. Hello and welcome to This Week in Debian. Today we've got a great episode. We're speaking with Lars, a Debian developer. Lars, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, no problem. So, Lars, before we get too far into the interview, the first question I like to ask everyone that we interview is, how did you first get involved into Linux?
I went to university back in the 80s, and I had this friend who decided that he wants to do something cool with his new PC. And we had been talking about all sorts of hackerish things, and then he ended up writing a terminal emulator, which eventually turned out to become the operating system kernel called Linux. So that's why I got involved.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that you're like personal friends with Linus Torvalds?
Yes.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. So how was that, like, in the, when, you know, he, so were you and him working on the Linux kernel, or did he come up with this and say, hey, check this out, Lars, look at what I did?
Well, he did, the first thing he showed me was that he had recently bought his first PC, a 386 machine, and, now, first he had been playing Prince of Persia for a few months, but then after he got tired of that, he wanted to learn assembly programming on the Intel chips.
Yeah.
He'd been writing assembly programs for other machines for years, so this was a logical step for him. And one of the things he was especially interested in was multitasking. So he wrote a small program that had two threads, one which was printing out an A to the screen, and one which was printing out a B. And he was very proud when there were a few A's and then a few B's and then swapping all the time.
Man.
And that's how Linux started.
No kidding. So, I guess then what brought you to the Debian project once you were right there during the creation of it all, what brought you to the Debian project?
Well, in 93, I heard that someone had created a new Linux distribution, which was not the first one, but one of the first ones.
Yeah.
And I was tired of whatever I was using back then. I think SLS or MCC Interim or something, and wanted to try something new. So I did that. And the reason I chose Debian over Red Hat was that I wanted to maintain a balance of power. Linus was installing Red Hat on his machine at the same time.
Mm.
So obviously I need to go to Debian. I also liked the fact that Ian Murdoch, the founder of the project, very much wanted to make it into a community.
Mm.
Whereas Red Hat clearly was going to be a commercial thing.
Huh, that's interesting. Man, so, I just had a ton of questions come to mind. I didn't even know you were friends with Linus. This is crazy. So, you were right there in the beginning of even Debian. How close did you work with Ian Murdoch with the creation of Debian?
Not at all, actually.
Okay.
I was merely a user of Debian until about 96.
Okay.
When I started contributing back to Debian.
Okay, so when you started contributing, what did you start contributing to the community in Debian?
There were a few packages I created, and I think fairly early on I also took over maintaining the version 2 of the PGP program for Debian. So downloading the upstream code and making sure it works in Debian and fixing any bugs.
Mm.
And this was one of those things that had to be done by someone outside of the United States, and there went, well, Debian was a small project back then, and there weren't too many people involved in Debian at all, and not too many outside of Debian, outside of the US, I mean. So someone had to step up, and I had some free time, so that was me.
That's pretty cool. So you weren't really involved with the, like, inner workings of Debian becoming a project then? You were just a small contributor adding to what was going to then turn into one of the largest distros of Linux that we now know.
Yeah. That's correct.
Man. So, all right. Well, I guess fast forwarding a little bit now, like we said, you're a Debian developer, but you also deal a little bit with the upstream issues, and you're also going to be working with the front desk project that Debian's introducing here?
Yes, correct. I have, for the past year or so, in September 2009, I retired from Debian for the second time. And I had been, I wasn't actually unhappy with the project, but the kinds of things you do when you're developing Debian tend to be not the kinds of things I wanted to do back then.
Yeah.
Which was mainly writing programs myself.
Okay.
So I retired, and one of the things I was involved in the past year was the Koha project, which is an integrated library management system from originally from New Zealand.
Mm.
And I helped Koha create some Debian packages, fairly simple packages that didn't even work right out of the box, but they made the process of installing Koha, which is a web application, much, much easier than it had been. And the people involved in Koha were really, really grateful for these packages. And this then reminded me why Debian is so great. It makes things easy for people who don't want to spend all the time reading makefiles and readmes and configure scripts and random files in slash etc.
Mm.
And then in August, at the 10th Debian yearly conference, I gave a talk on upstream versus Debian, or upstream together with Debian.
Mm.
The upstream projects, the people who write the software that Debian packages, tend to be people who are good at writing the software but have no idea what it means to build a distribution.
Mm.
Whereas the people who create the Debian project do know usually both sides, because we all tend to write some software.
Right.
Or at least we have a keen appreciation of what it means to write software in particular ways that make it either easier or harder to make the package. And, well, I gave a talk on what it feels like going from a Debian developer to an upstream developer. And one of the things I suggested was that there should be an entity within Debian that was a single contact point for upstream developers who want or need to talk to Debian.
Mm.
And this is now called the Upstream Front Desk, and I'm one of three or four people at the front desk. We haven't yet actually gotten started very much, but there's a wiki page on the Debian wiki for that has a lot of instructions for upstream developers, so that on what they can do to make it easier to become packaged and to have their software packaged in Debian. This wiki page was actually written long before my talk, and I wasn't the one who wrote it. I wasn't even aware of this.
Oh, man.
When I gave my talk. There's so many things going on in Debian that it's impossible to know everything.
Yeah. And after a talk, it sounds like someone nominated you to be part of the front desk.
Yeah.
So this is a really good, a really a good project. I think this for many reasons. I mean, one, Debian is such a widely used distribution and such an important distribution. One, for being such a solid distribution and always being rock solid, steady and stable. But two, there must be literally like 100 distributions that build off of Debian. It's quite, crazy. I mean, what, not only building off of Debian, but then you have Ubuntu, and then distros build off of Ubuntu, which builds off of Debian. So I think this is really great, this front desk idea to try and keep things, as tightly knit as you possibly can.
Yes, I think so too. We already had, before the upstream front desk, a derivatives front desk, who are the people in charge of maintaining the relationship with Ubuntu and all the other derivatives of Debian. So the upstream front desk is the same, except in the other direction.
Okay, could you talk a little bit about that then?
The upstream.
Yeah, well, like, what's the other direction then for the front desk? Like, what? So, can you kind of get into the nuts and bolts a little bit of exactly what the front desk will be doing?
Things we will be doing is the most important thing is to be a single contact point for any upstream project that knows about Debian and needs to talk to Debian. It might be some project that realizes that they would like to have Debian packages made for their software,
Yep.
or it might be a project that already has packages but what would like to have them included in Debian.
Okay.
Or it might be a project that is already in Debian, but the Debian maintainer might, for example, be missing,
Okay.
which occasionally happens
Yeah.
with 1,000 people. It's sometimes people get busy and get married and forget that they had a life online.
Right. So then, is Debian? It's probably not really the right way to describe it. Debian is going to be kind of like the middleman, sort of like to at least bring some cohesiveness to, like you said, all upstream projects. So if there is a problem with package XYZ, if this person can't get a hold of the actual upstream, they can get a hold of the front desk, which in turn will have better contact with this particular package.
Exactly.
Okay.
The upstream front desk does not expect to be fixing all the problems in the packages,
Okay.
for example,
Okay.
but we will know to whom to talk to.
Right,
We
so
know the De
right, you'll
we know
have
the Debian project we know the Debian project, so we know how to find the people who are concerned.
I see, yes. Yeah, so you'd have a more streamlined process. You'll the front desk will be able to get in touch with, more or less every package within Debian a lot easier than, this singular person who might not even know where to begin to look to even find a particular person upstream.
Exactly.
Ah, that's really cool. So will the front desk then work with like I can't really think of an example. Let's say if there's some, smaller distribution that, maybe not that many people know of or whatever, and, they're building off of Debian, will they then be able to utilize the front desk if they're having a problem with some packages? Then Debian can kind of point them in the right direction or get them in contact with these packages.
Possibly. I think you're. Are you talking about derivatives of Debian?
Yeah. Like, say, if someone's building
Okay.
off of Debian, will they use the front desk, or are they, or is that more the derivatives part that you mentioned?
They would ideally be speaking to the derivatives front desk, not the upstream front desk. Debian started to have at least three front desks now.
Okay.
We have the original front desk, which is for the new maintainer front desk,
Okay.
which is for people who want to become Debian developers. And we had then we have the derivatives front desk who help derivatives of the Debian distribution.
Okay.
And the upstream front desk, which is the new one, which is the one I belong to, talks to people who make software that isn't packaged in Debian yet.
I see. So could you talk a little bit about the derivatives front desk then, and kind of touch base on that a little bit to let our listeners know?
I haven't had much experience with that.
Okay.
Most derivatives are quite small.
Mm.
They might be, for example, there have been derivatives built for a particular school.
Mm.
And the people who do that work tend to know what they're doing, so they don't need all that much help.
Okay.
It's my understanding that the derivatives front desk is the focal point for discussions for things like, what can Debian do to make it easier to create a derivative?
Mm.
And if there are issues that affect several derivatives, other distributions, but don't actually affect Debian itself. It might be, for example, that there's a group of packages that many distributions say they want to customize them.
Yeah.
And they want to customize them in such ways that the current Debian packages don't help. And these Debian packages might be maintained by a number of different people.
Mm.
So it's not a one-to-one relationship or a one Debian developer and many distros relationship.
Mm.
So it's lots of people on the Debian side and lots of people on the derivatives side who all need to talk together, and then the derivatives front desk or the derivatives mailing list is the place to do this discussion.
Mm.
And as usual in these cases, sometimes it happens that none of these derivatives knew that everyone else is having this problem as well.
Mm.
So it helps to have a one place to pool the information.
Yeah, definitely. That's really cool that Debian actually will focus on how can we make this easier to, you know, let other people build off of what we're doing. I didn't even know that Debian, you know, focused on making it as easy as possible. You'd figure, you know, it's Linux, and you know, Debian could be like, yeah, fine, build off of us, but you're kind of on your own. That's really cool that you actually, you know, consciously make an effort to say, like, what can we do to make it easier for you to build off of us? That's really cool.
Yeah, there's two explanations for this phenomenon. One is that most Debian developers are really nice people. The other reason is that most Debian developers are fairly lazy. And it's easier on the developers if they can make things like derivatives easier to do so that not everyone needs to bother them directly.
Ah, that makes sense. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I see what you're saying. And so instead of, you know, bugging me, the developer, just, you know, here, do it on your own.
Yeah.
You can spin it your own way.
Yeah. I mean, if you are a developer and say, just say, like you said before, that you're free to do your own distro, but don't bother me, that doesn't help because they will bother you anyway.
Yeah.
They will have bugs, they will have questions, they need help. But if you make it easy, as the Debian project has done,
mm.
to make a derived distribution, then everyone benefits.
Which I guess, I'm assuming that this is where the upstream front desk will come into play and be a big help then. When
I hope so also.
Yeah.
My personal desire with the upstream help desk is to make more upstream developers understand what it means to actually build a distribution.
Mm.
Many people who are not involved in distros have the impression that in order to build something like Debian, you take the source code for the kernel and GCC and X and OpenOffice and a few other programs, you compile those, you create something that is basically a glorified tarball for each of them, and you're done.
Mm.
So it's just a lot of compilation and setting up a website. But that's very far from the truth.
Yeah.
Even when the actual package management for one package might be only the compilation part, you still have to decide which version of the upstream project's code to package because they might be in the middle of a rewrite and you don't want to package that version.
Right.
Or say on. But the big job here actually is, or part of the big job, is also to make sure that all these packages, all these, I don't know, 20 or 30,000 packages that Debian contains, work together.
Mm.
So if you have a web server and a web application, the web application puts its files in a place that the web server finds.
Yeah.
Which tends to be what users want.
Yeah.
And also, this integration work is often straightforward because upstream developers like to be able to install their software as well. But often it requires understanding things that the upstream developer, decisions that the upstream developer has made that make it hard to make a package, an integrated package. For example, in the Koha project, they have made a decision that the Koha system, which has one user interface for library customers and another one for library staff, these would be on two different ports or two different domain names. And the reason they made this decision was that it was easier to implement, and it's also certain security aspects are easier to do this way. However, this is something that makes it harder to make the Debian packages and make them so that they work out of the box for various technical reasons. And when I was making these Debian packages for the Koha project, this came up, and I talked to them about this, and they will probably change it sometime in the future so that you can have everything under one domain, so that you have something / public for the public interface and / staff for the staff interface.
Okay.
Which both of these ways of doing this are entirely valid.
Mm.
However, one of them is easier for the distro, and one of them is harder for the distro.
Right.
And the upstream developers made a perfectly sane and rational decision to pick one choice, because they had no understanding what it means to do the packages. So I had a point here.
Yeah.
Right. So spreading the understanding of these kinds of decisions and their impact on the distro is one of the things I would like to do with the upstream front desk.
Mm, yeah, that I can see the importance of that now. Definitely. Yeah, I mean, people probably assume like I did, like, oh, well, I mean, if you're creating programs, you have to understand how a distribution works. So there possibly can't be a problem with that process, you know?
Yeah. Unfortunately, there sometimes is.
Yeah. Dealing with, I have a question about, like, dealing with derivatives. Like, what's the line that Debian draws? Like, let's say if there is a derivative and they're, you know, they're using all of the Debian packages, but they want to change some of the packages to meet their needs. Where's the line Debian draws where they say, you know, we'll maintain the package up to this point. If you change it over this line, it's going to be your problem, and you will then become the upstream or whatever of this package if you change it past this point.
On a per package level, that's something that's entirely up to the maintainer of the Debian package.
Okay.
Debian has a number of tools that makes it easier to do things like configuration in various ways using debconf and so on. And if the package maintainer finds it helpful to find it in them to be helpful, and it's technically a sound decision, then this can be included in the Debian package.
Okay.
But sometimes a custom distribution is required because the custom distribution has needs that are unsuitable for Debian itself.
Mm.
It might be, for example, that... Okay, this is a made-up example because it's slightly out of my area of expertise. But something like an email server,
mm.
they might need it set up in a particular way that suits their internal network.
Okay.
Excuse me, I need to cough. Sorry. The email server needs to be set up in a particular way for the internal network, but there's no point in having this configuration in the Debian package itself.
Mm.
It might be possible to have a generic way of configuring using debconf and preceded installs the Debian package so that it suits the internal network, but sometimes not even that is possible. And the package really needs to be adapted in a particular way.
Mm.
And if this happens, then the company with the internal network will need to create at least their own package of their own version of the mail server package. If there are a lot of these packages that they need to maintain separately, it might be easier for them at some point to go entirely basically to create a Debian derivative where most packages are the same, but that then there is a lot, this large subgroup of packages that are forked.
Yeah.
But again, it's something that needs to be decided on a case-by-case basis. It's a lot of work to maintain your own distribution, even if you're a Debian derivative.
Mm.
So it's not a decision to be made lightly, but a lot of people have made this decision. So it's also something that seems to work very well for a number of people.
Yeah. So, say if a project does want to do a derivative of Debian, does Debian help at all with, the build process or trying to help the person like, oh, well, you need to put it together this way. Does Debian help at all with that sense of it, or is the person or people on their own when it comes to that sense of it?
There is some documentation on this and some tools for this.
Okay.
There's also something called a custom Debian blend.
Mm, yeah.
Which is for these kinds of situations when you need to adapt the package or some subset of packages in certain ways, or you might need other adaptations that you need to do. And that should help most people who need these situations.
I guess going back to the beginning of the interview, mentioning like working with Linus, like, it must be amazing to see everything where it is now when you're probably sitting in your college dorm room and he's showing you this thing for the first time. You probably couldn't have ever imagined it being what it is today.
Oh, I could imagine.
Oh, really?
I was a science fiction fan. I'm still a science fiction fan. And I bought my flying cars.
Well, I mean, Google's working on the autonomous car, so that's something.
Yeah, baby steps.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway,
actually, on a more direct level, I had no idea that Linux would be this big,
mm.
or free software would be this big,
mm.
Or that, I mean, things would go so far. In general,
yeah.
Every time I install Linux on a new computer, I basically don't realize while I'm installing it that things have progressed so far.
Mm.
But occasionally, I run into a problem like I bought a new printer some some weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out of the box. And after being annoyed at it for a few minutes, I realized that, wait a minute, my expectations had changed.
Yeah.
I no longer expected to be spending a week on finding device drivers or data sheets and writing my own device driver or something.
Right.
I expected to plug it in and it would work.
Yeah. Well, that's when you need to email Linus and be like, "Hey, where's my printer driver, dude?"
Yeah.
Man, were you hanging out with him after he like uploaded the first like kernel, and you know, were you like talking with him when he's like, "Man, I can't believe, you know, all these people are downloading it and using it." Was he like kind of blown away by that?
Yeah, I think after he did the first actual tarball upload,
yeah,
around August or September 91, he was very amazed by when a day or two later he was told that 100 people had downloaded it.
Man, that's crazy.
And you have to remember that this was a kernel version that basically didn't work. Or at least, you could compile it, and if you knew how to install it, it would work, but there was no way to install it.
Yeah.
There were 100 people who were so interested in a free operating system kernel that they couldn't use, that they would download the source code and read through it, and very soon after that, he started getting patches.
Mm.
Sometimes patches from people who had not even been able to compile it.
Wow.
But there were obvious, typos in comments and so on that people started noticing immediately.
Right.
And this was really gratifying for both of us, actually, but especially for Linus, because that meant that people are interested in this and they're willing to help. And he then started a feedback loop where he incorporated changes from other people, which made them even more eager to help. And put in even more people to help. And then he incorporated those patches, and it snowballed from that there.
Man, yeah, that's crazy. Were you doing any patches at that time with Linus at all, or were you just kind of...
No patches. I have made only one kernel contribution and one bug fix several years later.
Mm.
And one readme and minor things like that. But we did have a number of technical discussions about how to do certain things.
Mm.
Though usually that meant that we had a discussion, we had then a disagreement,
yeah.
And he would pick anything that I didn't think was good.
So you guys are balancing each other out then?
Yeah.
Man, yeah, that's pretty awesome. I can't imagine what it must be like seeing, you know, being right there when he was like, "Hey, check this out," to, you know, you can now go to DistroWatch and look at, you know, 200-300 different distributions, you know, using the Linux kernel. That must be amazing to just see the growth like that out of, you know, just someone's dorm room, you know?
Yeah. And it's also amazing. I've seen Linux running on a watch.
Yeah, that too.
And I've visited huge data centers in LA and elsewhere that have their hectare or two in size and have thousands and thousands and thousands of computers in racks, all of them running Linux.
Yeah. And there must be countless of other things that no one's even aware of that's, you know, running Linux in some way, shape, or form.
Yes. And I have a phone that runs Linux.
Yeah, exactly.
I've had a printer that runs Linux internally.
Mm.
There are people with TVs that run Linux.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, it's quite amazing. So I guess Linus was right in rejecting all of my ideas.
What were some of yours that you had that he was like, "No, you're crazy. I'll never do that"?
Oh, I've forgotten. I've forgotten all the stupid ideas for the kernel.
Yeah, I guess speaking of the curl, there's been some recent updates, like someone was changing the scheduler, has made some changes to the scheduler.
Yeah, I heard something about that.
Yeah, so like, I'm interested to see how the improvements of that once it gets, you know, pushed down into the more of the mainline distros or whatever. I'm not sure what version yes. I'm not sure what version that's in, but pretty excited to check that out.
Yes, these things have happened every now and then in the past 19 years. Usually, most changes to the kernel don't attract any particular attention. But then there's some small thing that lots of people get very excited about. And sometimes that's a good thing, sometimes it's a bad thing. I assume this latest thing is a good thing, but I haven't really looked into that. But there have been some of these things that people have become very excited about have been actually big things. In, I think, 1992 or 1993, not entirely sure anymore, Linux got X. And this was a huge thing.
Yeah.
Because it changed the entire... It was the year of the desktop for Linux.
Yeah.
But one of the things that people got very upset about was that X would only work for one particular or a small number of very small number of graphics cards. And there was one person in particular who got very upset and said that this whole Linux thing, X thing, will not go anywhere unless it supports every graphics card ever made. Which still hasn't happened.
Right.
But working on that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of X, what do you think of people saying they want to switch over to Wayland? How do you think that will affect, you know, everything?
Well, I expect to suddenly notice that I'm no longer using X. I'm sure there's going to be a large number of changes that need to be done. But most programs that people now write for the desktop use either the GTK widgets or the Qt widgets. And programs written on top of those really don't need to know if they're running on X or the frame buffer or Wayland or something else.
Okay.
And the abstraction is not entirely complete, but it's complete enough that 99% of the code really doesn't care.
That's interesting.
And the remaining 1% is going to be painful and take a long time to fix.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, people are saying it's going to take, you know, realistically years to really make that kind of a switch, but I mean, would it really change any, like, performance or anything like that within the operating system? Or, I mean, is it...
Yes, I haven't looked at Wayland, so, myself, so this is based on hearsay, but my understanding is that there's a number of things that Wayland does better from a technical point of view. It's going to mean that we lose a few things, but... certain things like responsiveness and performance on the desktop are going to be easier to achieve under Wayland than under X.
Okay.
And X has been an amazing success for the past quarter of a decade.
Right.
However, some of the design decisions possibly should be revisited at this time.
Okay.
One thing that I've always liked very much about X is the network transparency.
Yeah, so a lot of people have mentioned that.
Yeah, but remote desktop solutions like VNC also solve this problem, albeit in a different way. But so it's not that we're going to be entirely losing all this network transparency thing. It's just going to be done differently, and it might be that if we sacrifice some things, we might achieve other things that are currently impossible.
Yeah.
It's a bit like playing chess, except much more fun.
And with Wayland, I'm assuming it's a much smaller code base than X, so it'll be a lot easier to implement stuff earlier into Wayland that, wasn't even thought of 25 years ago when X was created.
Sure. One of the nice things about X has been that it has been scaled up and extended for decades now in ways that the original developers had no inkling of, like 3D
Right,
graphics
right.
and so on. So I don't have a personal opinion of whether Wayland is going to be a good thing or a bad thing. I'm expecting Keith Packard to tell us whether it's going to be a good thing or a bad thing.
Who's that?
Keith Packard is one of the original X developers
Oh, okay.
and possibly one of the few of the original ones who are still active. And he's really smart and pragmatic, and he really knows his stuff. So if he thinks it's okay, it's going to be okay.
So I mean, if Debian and like Ubuntu and Fedora start adopting Wayland, I mean, would X basically disappear? Would there be no more use for it?
Probably.
Wow, that'd probably be a hard pill to swallow if you're the maintainer of that package and
Yeah, but
have taken care of
these
it
things
for so
happen.
long. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Frankly, if I had been maintaining the same piece of code for 25 years, I would be glad to let it go now.
Well, hopefully Linus doesn't think that
Yeah.
way.
Thing is, Linus mostly doesn't work on code anymore. He works on people.
Yeah, that's true.
And he no longer even works on people who work on code. He works on people who work on people who work on code.
Yeah.
And that's seems to be an endless amount of fascination.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, does he at least, I mean, he obviously must be keeping a close eye on at least what's being pushed through, but yeah, that must be
He
interesting.
reviews
Yeah.
huge amounts of code
Yeah.
and fixes some code, and he also writes some code, but only a fraction of the code is his anymore.
Yeah, it's not like he's sitting in front of his computer 8 hours a day cranking out code.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, he must be amazed too by what this has all turned into.
Probably.
I would imagine.
Yeah. But you have to remember that Linus is also a science fiction fan.
Yeah, so yeah, like you said, yeah, you could see it from the beginning, so yeah, that's very awesome stuff, and I highly appreciate all the work that you and he have done on Debian and the kernel and everything. It's that none of this would be possible without people like you, so on behalf of GNU Linux users, thank you very much for your work.
Thank you, and thank you for your work.
Ah, no problem. Lars, I could probably talk all day about this. Is there anything else you want to mention about upstream or the front desk, or is there anything we might have overlooked that you'd like to mention, or
Well, I can't think of anything right now, but if anyone has any questions about the upstream front desk, then find us on we have a wiki page. The address of which I have probably forgotten because I never remember anything anymore. But it's fairly easy to find on the wiki, and we have a mailing list, and talk to me on IRC if you want.
Yeah, definitely. Do you know the IRC room by off chance, or?
We don't have a particular room for
Oh,
this,
okay.
but you can talk to me. I'm LIW on ERFDC.
Okay. Awesome. Lars, I thank you so much for your time and for coming on and doing the interview. And again, thank you for your work on Debian and everything that you've done in the past.
You're welcome.
All right, well, thanks again, and I'm sure I'd like to talk to you sometime soon again when maybe the front desk is up and running in full effect, and we can maybe give some more details on that and things.
Sure.
So yeah, that'd be great.
Let's do that.
Awesome. Again, Lars, thank you for your time, and we'll talk to you again sometime soon. All
Good. Goodbye.
right, thank you. Thank you for listening to This Week in Debian. If you know someone, or you yourself, are in the Debian community, please get a hold of us. We can interview you. If you'd like to get a hold of us, our email address is feedback@frostbitemedia.org. Again, that email address is feedback@frostbitemedia.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.